Following are comments on William Shakespeare's King Lear, Act 5. To both these sisters have I sworn my love. As military maneuvers continue apace, Edmund schemes to benefit from Regan and Goneril's struggle over his affections. In Act 5, Scene 1, Albany joins his forces with those of Regan and Edmund in order to defeat the French invaders. Meanwhile, Edmund, Goneril, and Regan are locked in a struggle for erotic and political supremacy as they prepare to fight Cordelia's rescuing force. Edmund's idea for advancement is to play both women against each other. As he muses, quote unquote, "To both these sisters have I sworn my love, each jealous of the other as the stung are of the adder. Which of them shall I take?" Act 5, Scene 1, Lines 47 through 49. He will also use Albany while the fighting is going on and then dispose of him afterwards. At least that's what he thinks. Act 5, Scene 1, Lines 54 through 61 inclusive. Unknown to the wicked couple, Edgar in disguise delivers to Albany the letter he found on Oswald, revealing Edmund and Goneril's plot against Albany's life. In defense of its truth, Edgar promises to supply a chivalric contestant if victory smiles on the British. Act 5, Scene 1, Lines 40 through 46 inclusive. Ripeness is all. The French are defeated, and Edgar counsels the despairing Gloucester to be patient in his suffering. In Act 5, Scene 2, the French forces are defeated. Lear and Cordelia are taken prisoner, and Gloucester falls into despair. Edgar is disappointed to find his father so abjectly depressed, and counsels him, quote unquote, "Men must endure their going hence, even as their coming hither. Ripeness is all." Act 5, Scene 2, Lines 9 through 11. "We two alone will sing like birds in the cage. Lear and Cordelia are reunited, if only for a moment." In Act 5, Scene 3, Cordelia and King Lear are apprehended after the French defeat, and Lear enjoys one last encounter with his beloved daughter, which at first turns upon a vision of transcendence. Quote unquote, "Come, let's away to prison. We two alone will sing like birds in the cage. When thou dost ask me blessing, I'll kneel down and ask of thee forgiveness." Act 5, Scene 3, Lines 8 through 11, see 8 through 19 inclusive. The old king predicts that he and Cordelia will participate in God's mysterious knowledge of all things. As far as Lear is concerned, this knowledge will place them above the mightiest mortal rulers. Act 5, Scene 3, Line 18. If only that were true, it would mean that instead of reading a tragedy, we would have been reading a heartwarming romance play all along. Something on the order of The Winter's Tale, in which the impetuous King Leontes of Sicilia regains the wife he wronged and the daughter he cast away. Indeed, audiences have been treated to something very like that ending, both in an earlier version of Lear, sometimes attributed to Thomas Kyd, and much later, in 1681, when Nahum Tate revived a happy ending version, The History of King Lear, for post-Restoration audiences. But Edmund has no interest in such an ending, and he cuts off Lear's exalted utterance with a harsh command, "Take them away." Act 5, Scene 3, Line 19. Political and military events have outstripped the process whereby Lear has recovered his identity and reaffirmed his affiliation with Cordelia. Edmund's blunt order completes the triumph of depraved literalism over legitimate power, virtue, and the present prophetic discourse. Lear is rehumanized and endowed with new insight into what is right and wrong, what is human and what is not. But he and Cordelia present a threat to Edmund, so they must go. "Some good I mean to do, despite of mine own nature. Defeated and dying, Edmund tries to make partial amends. Still in Act 5, Scene 3, Edmund is overtaken by the fate he has made for himself. Albany refuses to recognize him as an equal, which bodes ill for Edmund's hopes to wield power in the new dispensation. His presence provokes a life and death struggle between Goneril and Regan. Act 5, Scene 3, lines 55 through 75 inclusive. On top of that, when Edmund refuses to turn over Lear and Cordelia, Albany arrests him and Goneril for capital treason. Act 5, Scene 3, lines 44 through 52 inclusive, and line 77. Albany challenges Edmund, and Edgar, as promised, shows up to fight him in single combat. Act 5, Scene 3, lines 84 through 87. Edmund, who had put so much faith in raw nature, that is, in something like a precursor to the popularized version of Darwinian evolution as the survival of the fittest, is now trapped into defending the newfound legitimacy bestowed upon him first by Gloucester and then by Cornwall. He must accept Edgar's challenge, and in his defeat, he is forced to listen to the legitimate son's pious declaration. Quote unquote, "The gods are just, and of our pleasant vices make instruments to plague us. The dark and vicious place where thee he got cost him his eyes." Act 5, Scene 3, lines 162 through 165. As an aside, this last invective may be inspired by the language of Shakespeare's source for the Gloucester subplot, a portion of Book 2 of Philip Sidney's Arcadia, where the blind former king of Paphlagonia hurls some harsh words at the memory of his concubine, the mother of a devious, illegitimate son, much like Edmund. Edgar reports to Albany that Gloucester has died of grief. Regan, meanwhile, has been poisoned by Goneril, who then takes her own life after she sees Edmund gravely wounded in his fight with Edgar. Act 5, Scene 3, lines 199 through 202. The dying Edmund is moved by Edgar's relation of his own travails and Gloucester's death from, quote-unquote, extremes of passion, joy, and grief. Act 5, Scene 3, line 190. He shows insight regarding what has happened between the members of his own love triangle. Quote unquote, "All three now marry in an instant." Act 5, Scene 3, lines 203 through 204. Finally, this bad man declares, quote unquote, "Some good I mean to do despite of mine own nature." Act 5, Scene 3, lines 218 through 219. With his last breaths, he tries, even if unsuccessfully, to redeem himself by revealing his decision to execute Lear and Cordelia. Act 5, Scene 3, lines 218 through 222 inclusive. "Why should a dog, a horse, a rat have life, and thou no breath at all?" King Lear confronts the worst of all outcomes. By Act 5, Scene 3, Edgar has reclaimed his personal honor and avenged Edmund's betrayal of Gloucester, so to some extent, at least, he has reasserted the principle that there is a divine moral order. All is not chaos and violence. Still, as the rest of this scene shows, the Gloucester and Lear plots do not come together in a similarly uplifting way. Lear and Cordelia have run out of time, and Edmund's repentance cannot save Cordelia from being hanged, nor can it prevent King Lear from dying of grief not long after his inconsolable utterance. Quote unquote, "Why should a dog, a horse, a rat have life and thou no breath at all? Thou'lt come no more, never, 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 never." That's how the old king dies, perhaps believing at the end that Cordelia still shows some faint sign of life. Act 5, Scene 3, lines 282 through 284. In Shakespeare's 1580s source play, The True Chronicle History of King Lear, spelled L-E-I-R, plausibly attributed to Thomas Kidd by scholars such as Brian Vickers, Cordelia and Lear survive. And in Nahum Tate's 1681 revival, the king and Cordelia survive, as does Gloucester, for Tate includes the Gloucester subplot, which isn't part of the true chronicle history. Neoclassical critics and audiences found the actual Shakespearean ending an intolerable violation of representational ethics. The good must be rewarded, and the wicked must be punished. It would be stretching the truth beyond recognition to suggest that that is what happens in this, Shakespeare's bleakest play. In Cordelia's death, the justice of the heavens is hardly apparent. It is true that vice is represented as thoroughly disgusting in King Lear, just as Dr. Johnson says it should be in his preface to Shakespeare, but virtue is by no means shown to be triumphant. We must endure the old king's quote-unquote, going hence, in unbearable agony and near incoherence. At the end, he sounds pitifully delusional. Moreover, by the end of Shakespeare's play, nobody really wants to rule Lear's blighted kingdom. Albany asks both Kent and Edgar to take the reins of power together, but Kent issues what sounds like a verbal suicide note. Evidently, sole responsibility will be left to Edgar, but his concluding lines are oddly unsatisfying as a summation. Quote unquote, "The weight of this sad time we must obey. Speak what we feel, not what we ought to say. The oldest hath borne most. We that are young shall never see so much, nor live so long." Act 5, Scene 3, lines 299 through 302. It's hard to avoid the feeling here that "speak what we feel, not what we ought to say," is itself a thoroughly conventional, cliched sentiment, which is exactly what Edgar was hoping everyone present would avoid. If the play has been a quest for the restoration of authority, Edgar is hardly the quester who heals the Fisher King and makes the waters flow, as in the legend that T.S. Eliot used for his poem, The Wasteland. But Shakespeare's play is, of course, a tragedy and not a romance. In the end, what it may teach us is consonant with what many tragedies from the time of Aeschylus onward have taught. Namely, that the deepest insight into humanity does not accompany the workings of earthly power, and the heavens were not built to increase our comfort or indulge our stubborn, selfish pride. All that said, what is the quality of the insight in King Lear? Edgar can't do much more than repeat the truism voiced earlier by Gloucester, who derived from his superstitions the notion that better days have been. There's no easy accommodation, no magical reconciliation, no middle ground to occupy, just a pair of deceased royal visionaries and a remnant of disillusioned people repeating unconvincing truisms. The play's characters have tried various strategies of accommodation while recognizing the constrictions of nature, mortality, political power, and language. But no satisfying arrangements have emerged for maintaining civility and community. Finally, even though King Lear has pagan trappings, it seems best to treat it as tinged with Christian principles, and within that framework, tragedy is constituted by the enormous gap between wisdom and felicity, between God's will and human desire. Some human suffering is preventable, but at the deepest level, sorrow and loss are the only true teachers. At this level, even a great king, like Lear, is, as he calls himself, the quote-unquote natural fool of fortune, Act 4, Scene 6, line 185. But it's hard to call this play's conclusion a triumphalist victory for Christian overcoming. In truth, the play's end more naturally calls to mind, for us modern readers, the final lines of the nursery rhyme about a certain animate egg, quote-unquote, "all the king's horses and all the king's men couldn't put Humpty Dumpty together again." Let's end this commentary with a word about the character that Goneril calls Lear's quote-unquote, "all-licensed fool." Act 1, Scene 4, line 69. The fool helps ward Lear away from self-pity, and he keeps us from over-pitying the king, at least until he disappears at Act 3, Scene 6, line 42, saying, quote-unquote, "and I'll go to bed at noon." With his insouciant songs and verses, the fool contributes to the play's tentative offering of something like a strategy of artistic or aesthetic redemption. Lear proves willing to listen to the truth in an eccentric form, unlike Regan and Goneril, whose disregard for the fool's art stems from their own dead-eyed literalism and obscene viciousness. Still, comfort is always, like poor Tom, a cold in King Lear. The fool's disappearance strands Lear to face, mostly alone, the impossibility of ever setting things right. Thanks for listening. The date of this audio recording is Thursday, July 10th, 2025. The foregoing material is copyright 2025 by Alfred J. Drake. For quotations, I have relied on the Norton Shakespeare 3rd edition, 4-volume genre-based format.